Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hello, everybody.
How you doing today, Christine?
Oh, I'm good. Just lots to do. Well, lots to do. And DEF CON and Black Hat and B-Sides are next week. So I got to get everything done before that starts. So,
yep, tis the season. Yeah. In the tech world, summer stops somewhere around the middle of August and stuff starts to slowly and then very, very rapidly pick up again, leading towards Labor Day and towards really the last quarter of the year and Christmas, which is something we really should talk about. There's really only a few typing months left before Christmas. And even though Google figures stuff out really fast, it's time to start thinking a lot about Christmas. It really is. I mean, that's the Black Friday and Cyber Monday more specifically.
Well, Black Friday really starts in September now in the US, which is just crazy.
Yeah.
It used to be like right that week. Then it was like November 1st. Then it was like October 1st. And last year there were people even advertising in mid-September.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a leftover from the old brick and mortar retail cycle, where you had to make all of your sales just before Christmas in the months leading up to Christmas, or you weren't going to be able to afford your rent sometime around February.
This is very true. My parents had a store and a Christmas store, so very true, very like that.
And it still sort of holds play today, given the incredible uptick in e-commerce towards the end of October, and then the moment American Thanksgiving ends, it's a sprint to this to the finish to you know, 2 weeks before Christmas, the last possible mailing date. We're talking about this now in the dead heat of August. I mean, it's not even the dog days of summer yet; they're coming in a few weeks. But this is the dead heat of August, the beginning of August, because time flies. Summer's almost over. And as we say every year in the middle of summer, summer's almost done. Get out and enjoy it. But before you do, get yourself together. Start thinking about Christmas. It's coming. Yeah. Winter is coming.
Maybe one more weekend before you start thinking about Christmas.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, so one thing we do want to think about are sponsors, Audience Key and Wix Studio. Big love to both of them and thank both very, very much for sponsoring the show. Christine, I think it's I think it's safe to say that you and I, both being of a certain age, would be kind of like elders in our community, or in the SEO community. We're certainly elder members of the SEO community. No. I know I am.
I'm not even like elder.
It might surprise some of our listeners to I mean, olders that we are, elders have elders. Mm-hmm. And it was Frank Watson. Frank Watson, like seriously, one of the old, serious founders of SEO. One of the yes. originals. It was his birthday last week, so happy birthday, Frank.
Happy birthday, Frank. I first met Frank when he was buying everybody in a bar a drink. I didn't even know him, and they said, that guy paid for it. And I'm like, what? And it said, he's buying everybody's drinks.
So not even going to get into the stories about Frank and drinks and back in the day. But there's a lot of them, and they often involve Frank buying the drinks. You know, one story I will say. Him and I, it was SES New York, so it was wintertime. It was really cold, or just about to get cold. And I think that was probably in March. I think they did SES New York in March. And we were walking back from a bar. It was stupid o'clock in the morning. It was a homeless guy, and Frank literally gave him the coat off his back. I swear to God.
Yeah, he's a really good guy.
Okay, so jumping into, you know what, we have a lot of show to go through. Tons and tons. Big
A
love,
lot.
Frank. You are beloved in the SEO industry, and dude, you earned your legendary status. Core update isn't extremely far away, according to John Mueller. The you know that they you know that core update that everyone's saying is just around the corner.
Yes.
So when John says it isn't extremely far away, does that mean it's further away than just around the corner, or the quarter's bigger than we thought it was, or that's just John saying it'll happen any day now?
I think any day now, because they did say someone else, I think it was Gary or somebody, said it would be around 2 to 3 weeks, about a week or so ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, and apparently there's going to be a bunch of changes on this one, so we'll see what happens. But they're not giving a lot of detail, of course. Although yesterday, in one of the groups, someone said that they knew somebody on the search team and that they were going to drop it today, and that also got deleted real quickly.
Yeah, well, you know, lots of insider information from inside of Google happens in the groups in 2024, right? I mean, you know how that
Exactly.
goes. Lots of
But
insider information gets released.
he did sound like he, might have a friend who told him, but he probably shouldn't have put that online. But anyway, so everyone was a buzz yesterday that it was going to happen today. But so far today, I have not seen anything happen. So, it still isn't extremely far away.
No, you know what? Google does have a habit of dropping them like 5 minutes after our show ends, because I'm positive they know
True.
when we record, and I'm positive that they do this just to vex
Totally
us.
related to us.
17 years of cat and mouse, Christine. You know,
Well,
and they're a much bigger cat than we are mouse. So
this is true. There isn't a holiday in the next week or two for them to drop it. So, they like to do that to us on Friday of the holiday weekend.
you guys still get a holiday weekend?
Not till
Oh
Labor
my
Day.
goodness, I'm broadcasting from the People's Republic of Canada, where we get holidays anytime the government can throw them at us.
I know, it's awesome.
It really is awesome. Mostly because we have a winter to die for, or in the middle of, if you're caught outside. And so, especially in the summertime, if it's warm, we're taking as many long weekends as we can. This is, I think, Family Day. I'm not sure what the August long
Oh.
weekend's called. They make up some name for it. It's I think it might be called Simcoe Day in Upper Canada, otherwise known as Ontario. Americans might remember Lord John Graves Simcoe as the fellow who tried to frustrate the Revolutionary War from the British side. Canadians will remember Sir John Graves Simcoe as the guy who ran Ontario after the Revolutionary War.
Okay.
So there you go.
Always
It's
interesting.
Simcoe
And
Day.
by the
Yay.
way, a little happiness in the US today. Just want to mention this real quick. People already know by the time this airs, but we did get a prisoner swap today, and some prisoners that have been overseas in Russia in prison for quite some time were released today and are back in the US. Not sure if they're back yet, but they are on the way to the US.
Okay, well, good. Excellent.
Yeah. Wall Street Journal reporter and Paul Whelan has been in for like 5 years, and then the person who helped on Navalny, I cannot say his name, Vladimir. Can't say his last name. But anyway, they were released today, so this is good news.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
If you are noticing a bug in Search Console, well, what you're noticing is a bug in Search Console.
Yes.
So you're looking to see how your website appeared in search results. You go over to, I don't know, the appearance, search appearance tab. You're not going to see all the different ways your results may have turned out. You will see AMP non-rich results, job listing, job details, but everything else apparently has been just isn't appearing. It doesn't mean that you're not appearing. It just means Google isn't reporting it.
Yeah, it could be fixed by the time we get done today, for all we know. But as of this morning, there was no news of it being corrected yet. So if you've had problems with Search Console for the last 2 days, that would be why.
Okay, so today is August 1st, 2024. Why is this a significant day beyond it being the only August 1st, 2024 in any of our lifetimes? Because this is the day that the first piece of major legislation that covers artificial intelligence officially goes into effect. The AI Act is a piece of EU legislation governing artificial intelligence. It was first proposed in 2020. The law tries to address the negative impacts of AI, And again, it goes into effect August 1st, 2024. I'm sorry, Christine.
I would say it's yes, but it's also targeting U.S. companies. So it's not like,
Well, targeting U.S. companies mostly because U.S. companies are the ones that are predominantly making the commercial grade and available AI. But
true. True.
I
It is
noticed
right
some
now
of the
in definition.
provisions, one of the provisions in the unacceptable risk category, which means it's absolutely banned, it would be social scoring applications. Using AI to help socially score your citizens, which is distinctly not an American tech giant thing, but more of a, People's Republic of China thing.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I mean, this they are looking at the uses of AI internationally and how AI might be used, and they separate into five different risk categories. The first being unacceptable, which means it's just banned outright. Second being high, third being general purpose, fourth being limited risk, fifth being minimal risk. And there's different criteria and penalties depending on the risk level. Now, to give listeners a gauge of what risk level might be, limited risk, which means that there's certainly a risk that could impede people's rights under law, but might not. Image manipulation, including the creation of deep fakes. So that isn't unacceptable, high risk, or high risk. That's considered limited risk. So just to gauge where, I mean, if you're talking about things that manipulate people's finance or try to manipulate large groups of people, that would be considered high risk. General purpose, making lists and making and publishing stuff is general purpose.
Yeah, ChatGPT, Google search, and Bing search, that kind of thing.
Now, if you breach the rules, and it's not hard to breach the rules, ask Elon Musk. He was making deep fakes is one thing, publishing them as news is quite another. If you breach the rules, the EU AI Act, say that four times fast, you could be fined between 35 million euros, which is 45 million American, or 7% of a company's global annual revenues, whichever is
That can
higher.
hurt.
That can hurt, indeed.
Yeah.
So again, the size of the penalties depends on the infringement, the size of the company fined, and what the infringement was. So there you go. AI Act comes into effect as of today.
Yep. It does. It took 4 years to get here, but they are here. So we will see how it goes because, like you said, the companies mostly responsible for this are, the Google, the big FAANG companies here in the United States, like Google, Microsoft, and of course OpenAI and some of the others.
You might remember, though, Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, and many of the other large companies use the EU and EU financial regulations to, shall we say, skirt paying taxes in America? Skirt's a good word. How about avoid? How about just get away with not paying taxes in America? So that does give the EU a certain amount of heft over their behavior. A certain amount of a
Yes,
leeway over their behaviors. You want to be
it
registered in
does.
Ireland? Okay, you're Irish. Top of the
The
morning to you.
one thing that is exempt are the open source generative AI models, which could be why Meta's been pushing that pretty hard. But to qualify for that exemption from the rules, this is from CNBC, open source providers must make their parameters, including weights, model architecture, and model usage, publicly available and enable access, usage, modification, and distribution of the model. Open source models that pose systemic risks will not account for the exemption. So there's a small loophole in there. We'll see how big our companies try to make
What I was going to
it.
say, this small loophole, I imagine, will be the size of a Mack truck by the time lawyers are done with it.
Pretty much.
All of the stuff was written by generative AI. I swear to goodness, even the programs that made it happen. Yeah, that's how it worked. Really. There's a push to have a AI bill in America. There's a number of bills that are buzzing around Congress right now, but OpenAI is actively lobbying for many of them. That's interesting. Why would OpenAI lobby government for bills that essentially will restrict its actions? or their actions in the future.
Sam Altman has finally realized he's not going to escape regulation and regulatory oversight. So you want to, if someone's going to make the rules, you want to be part of the group that's helping to make them, as opposed to standing on the outside.
Yeah, you know what? I think Altman understood all the way along. Altman seems to have been, I don't know if he's been acting honorably with Congress, but he's been communicating with them, where I think others have been trying to avoid looking, you know, opening the hood or showing any transparency. I think he's known this was coming, and this has been anticipated. Yeah.
But not so honorably, because he would go to Congress and say one thing, and then in other countries be doing other things that he wouldn't do. So he's not been honorable, but I do think he just realizes at this point, especially because Goldman Sachs, I think it was, or one of the big firms, gave them like a 12-month limited life expectancy if they didn't find a way to really make revenue. So I think they need to work with regulators so they don't have major issues getting anything to the market.
Okay, well, one way you might screw yourself up is, public perception is everything. And when you steal someone's identity, that'll mess you up. That'll give you a bad rep. OpenAI, advertently, is advertently the opposite of inadvertently? Like, quite advertently.
I can't believe so.
quite purposefully. How's this?
Yes.
How's this? Quite purposefully, OpenAI went and stole Scarlett Johansson's voice, repurposed it, and made it the voice of AI. Yeah, they did.
Well, they didn't. They used an actor that sounded like her. But in the state of California, there is a law that prohibits that. So he would have lost in court. So he got rid of her voice. The voice guy was removed.
So ChatGPT's voice, a hyper-realistic voice. I mean, maybe it's like the computer voice on Star Trek, or maybe it's like the voice that announces, I don't know, your nearest subway stop on your favorite transit system. But OpenAI's voice is going to be launching pretty much any time now. I think TechCrunch just published an article saying OpenAI's advanced voice mode is there, but they haven't had a chance to review it yet. But they will real soon.
Yeah, and on the other side with OpenAI, they weren't releasing it at first because of safety concerns, but they have 100 external red teamers. Those are the people who test, try to hack your system, but you're paying them to do that. They're not like, hackers in the basement somewhere, who speak 45 different languages. Report on these safety efforts will be coming in the next few weeks. I still have deep problems with this. It's going to be emotive. It's going to respond after listening to you. And if you read the critiques of that, there are so many different ways that people around the world communicate. And also very concerning for younger people who are people that may be easily attached to things, could develop like a feeling of connection to the AI voice. So there's just a lot of issues with this. So I do think it's unfortunate they're going to release it, but we'll see what happens. They're only going to have, I believe it's 4 voices to start.
Jupiter, Breeze, Cove, and Ember. So, I'm sorry, Juniper, Breeze, Cove, and Ember. So, strippers.
Pretty much. Oh, I do live in Vegas. This would be pretty common stripper name.
I didn't make the show notes, Christine. That's what's written here.
And that's in the TechCrunch article.
Well, no. The stripper's line is all mine, but Juniper, Breeze, Cove, and Ember are the names that advanced voice mode for according to ChatGPT.
It is. This will be hyper realistic. The people originally that will get it are in an alpha group, and they will be monitoring how people use it. So just be aware, if you're in the alpha group, you'll be monitored by OpenAI very closely. So you may want to be careful what you're saying into it to get it to talk to you, but. Anyway, I still have, like I said, issues with this. I think it caused a whole lot of problems, but we'll see what happens. I don't really see the benefit of it, but we'll see.
You know, this isn't part of our show notes. I was reading an article the other day that said people's trust in a product decreases when they understand that it's been made with, augmented by, written by, or whatever is associated with AI. If you say new and improved blue widgets enhanced with AI, people's trust in it decreases.
Makes sense.
So there was an old saying back in the 80s and 90s. You know what Ronald Reagan was great for? Punk rock.
What?
punk rock. You get a hyper conservative administration. You get really good punk rock. And so I sort of see the same thing happening here as AI sort of takes over as a social part of our lives. My first thought is, I mean, media literacy, computer literacy, you've got to understand that this is a computer simulation of a human, not a real human. But people aren't going to be able to understand it's a computer simulation. It's going to be hyper-realistic. I mean, like, for all you know, it'll be a voice like ours. And so people will understand this. And face-to-face, I think, will be a lot more amenable, more trustable, something people really get into. And maybe this is the rebirth of socialization.
We'll see.
Yeah, I'm an optimist by nature, you see.
I'm an optimist by nature, but I'm a realist. Both. I'm
an
idealist.
It's 2024. How can you be an idealist, a realist, and an optimist all at the same time without going crazy?
I'm Gen X. Of course I can be all three. That's how we were brought up. Watch an 80s movie. You'll understand, right?
I'm Gen X as well. And
I know you are. I know.
And I'm just all optimism all the time, as everybody well knows. Here's something that makes me optimistic.
Did lightning just strike you?
No, I don't know. Indeed. No. Actually, this really pisses me off. Election interference at Twixter.
Yes.
This is a wild time in American politics. I've never seen a turnaround in popularity like I've seen in the last 3 weeks. It's a complete reversal of energy. And a manifestation of that was a Twitter gathering that happened, 4 or 5 days ago, called White Dudes for Harris, where it was like 4 or 5 million. How many people got together?
It's about 200,000 people. They aired it on YouTube. So if someone wants to go see it, they can. Mark Hamill was on there, like all sorts of great celebrities. And they raised at the time $4 million, but I heard the White Women for Harris results come in. And then day one, it was $4 million. By the end of the week, it was $11 million.
Okay,
so I don't know what their final count is, but their count the other day was $4 million at the end.
Okay. A large amount of money. And now if you, they got banned for a while. I think they're actually back again.
Overnight, they were banned.
Any reference to them or to the Harris campaign or Harris's platform over Twitter is now marked as a dangerous link. That was
never happening.
That may have changed. That didn't happen. That was a rumor.
No, it did. It also happened on Facebook.
Oh, really? Yeah. Facebook marked Democrat links as dangerous.
Yes, I tried to share the Democracy Doc and it would not let me share it. And a bunch of people were posting in my feed that they couldn't share like basic links to basic stories or fundraisers or things like that. Yeah.
If the oligarchs are sweating it, the Democrats are probably swinging it. That seems to be the tone of this election. And you know what? I'm a Canadian. Actually, I do have a stake in this. It'll be bad for Canada if one side wins and the other doesn't. That's I'm not going to get into that, but I do have a stake in this. But I have a bigger stake in, I don't know, democracy. My country practices it. America practices it, but big swaths of the tech world don't wanna.
They want their crypto world. You know, they wrote about it. The PayPal mafia guys have a vision of a world run by them on tech and crypto. They have practiced in some cities. They tried to do a city in Nevada here, but it got shot down. But they do have one in California, and they did a bunch of that in a country in, I think it was South America, I'm not exactly sure, but it failed miserably.
Yeah, that experiment also failed. You know who wants crypto to really succeed? The one nation state that will absolutely benefit from crypto succeeding? Russia has mass stakes in crypto because that's the one currency that can't be well regulated. One form of currency, I should say, that can't be well regulated. I dare say that's why part of the new Shinobi platform is massive stores of U.S. wealth in cryptocurrency.
You know, the big thing. Like Musk made more in one day of pushing Dogecoin than he did in anything else, like more money than he's ever made at that time. And there was no regulation that could be brought against him for doing it. So he pumped and dumped it, and he made billions of dollars. Oh, and by the way, part of the issue at Facebook Meta may be that one of their public policy directors wrote the intelligence community chapter of the Project 2025 and is a heritage researcher.
Excuse me, could you say that again?
Yeah, this is in Japan Times. It came out this morning. The White House reform section was written by Rick Dearborn, Trump's one-time deputy chief of staff, and now works for companies as Shell and Verizon. But then there's Dustin Carmack, a former Trump administration official and current Meta public policy director, who wrote the intelligence community chapter. So yeah, somebody that's doing policy at Meta wrote a chapter in Project 2025. Well, and if people don't know about it, we're not going to get into that here today. I'm pretty sure
that 90% of our audience is aware of what Project 2025
is. I'm sure. I'm just saying we're not
smart and well-informed audience. I'm not touched. We're not getting into it, but I just want that to sink in for a second. Oh my God, I did not know that.
Yeah, I think it just came out this morning, or just in my feed this morning. I came out on July 25th in the Japan Times.
Just to make sure we get in a whole bunch of trouble. What was the guy's name again?
Hold on. Again, it's sorry, I just moved off that section while I was
sorry about that.
Carmack, Carmack.
Definitely worth knowing.
Yeah, something. And actually, this Japan Times article is really good for somebody for people to read, because it outlines other people that are involved in tech who are part of Project 2025. So it is in the Japan Times, but it was written in Bloomberg by Emily Birnbaum. And the name of the title is What the Extreme Project 2025 Says and Who Wrote It.
Okay.
So if you want to look it up. Yeah,
I absolutely do. And that's definitely something worth knowing, Webcology listeners. Okay. Yes. Here's something else worth knowing. Microsoft says OpenAI is now a competitor in AI and in search.
Yeah.
There's going to be like made for TV movies. Should there be television 30 years from now? There's going to be like made for YouTube movies about the relationship between like Microsoft and OpenAI. This is going to be like taught in business school as how you do not structure a relationship. What the hell's going on with these guys? I mean, they need each other's guts, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Remember, we did a story not that long ago about how Microsoft said they didn't need OpenAI anymore to have the tech now, and they made their own version. And so on Tuesday, Mike this is from NBC, Dallas Fort Worth. On Tuesday, Microsoft added the artificial intelligence startup to the list of competitors in the company's latest annual report. It's a roster for years that have included mega cap peers like Amazon, Apple, Google, and Meta. But now the one that they're partnered with is actually listed as a competitor. And we'll see what happens, because the search thing isn't even a definite done deal for OpenAI. They're like taking on comments from people allowed into the program first. But we'll see. But yeah, that's just going to be very interesting. But I guess OpenAI didn't ever look into Microsoft's history of, you know, inviting you in and then taking your stuff and then sending you away.
And then forgetting you ever existed. Yeah.
yeah.
So, okay, just to be clear, does Microsoft still own a piece of OpenAI?
I'd have to go look. I know they're still heavily involved in some structure, but it's not how I originally started. So they're in the structure of the company where they still have a big investment, but I don't know if it's still 49%, and I don't know specifically how it's structured. I just saw an article about it a week ago.
So we're not talking like awkward like company gatherings or really weird Secret Santa assignations, right? Like, this is just they're pretty much going their own ways. OpenAI is doing their thing, Microsoft is doing their thing, and now they're doing things that are butting heads.
Well, Microsoft and OpenAI still have partnerships. Like, they talked about, you know, having to put in like a nuclear power plant to power
provide the energy it takes to do OpenAI at that scale.
And to create their own AI data centers. So it's hard to know. Microsoft doesn't really need OpenAI now. They have the tech. They don't really need them. But OpenAI does still need Microsoft. So based on how they're structured. So we'll see.
Well, OpenAI.
If I were for today, we'll see. We'll see.
Oh, it depends, really. OpenAI, Microsoft, search entities. Again, search. One thing AI and search entities have in common is they need information. They need to hoover information to learn stuff to train on, or just to have in their index to refer people to. Reddit is really mad at everyone except Google, because everyone hoovered Reddit without paying for it. Now, that's kind of been the way the web's worked forever.
Well, and let's remind people, they didn't put a block in the robots text that said, don't hoover us. So they said they might, but they could have stopped Google or Bing from doing that before they did all the AI stuff. And now with the AI stuff, you can't really block Google unless you block Google completely in the robots text. Mm-hmm. But they're funneling it to Google now in a fire hose, because there's no robots text statement that says Google can't crawl this. I mean, only Google has access to this site.
Yeah, so everyone's blocked in the robots text. Nobody can get in. So there's a fire hose that goes to Google.
Yes, everybody's blocked. Every single thing that crawls the web and respects the robots text is blocked. I've never seen that actually be purposeful.
Now, here's the thing that's very much like putting the closing the barn door after the horse ran away, except there's more horses every day. More horses coming along every day.
Of course, yeah.
So Reed or Steve Huffman, the CEO of Reddit, is offering access as long as you pay. This is worrying to the web. This is worrying to the open web, because it harkens back to the days of AOL, where we have like closed walled gardens of content, and there's certain content that some people have and content that other people, you know what I mean? The web is supposed to be an open, free space. And at the same time, AI hoovers, regurgitates, and repurposes content. And, maybe Reddit has a obligation to... Maybe Reddit has an obligation to its users to not have the content to protect their content from AI from being repurposed and regurgitated and sent out again.
I mean, all the really worst stuff that AI overviews in Google put out was all from Reddit. So I don't know that they're missing out on anything but not being able to train on Reddit. Glue on your pizza, drinking your urine for kidney stones, all that good stuff was all from Reddit. So people actually identified the posts that came from. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is a winning game for Reddit. Like, because now they're public, they have to make money. So I guess I see this as a way to make money. But at the same time, long term, I don't know. I don't know if anyone's going to care about training on Reddit after they trained on Reddit. Although I know they need more and more data, because they're going to run out by, I think it was 2028. Of things to train on, but I just don't know that. I don't know. I know Microsoft right now though said no, but they don't care. They're not paying. Well,
so you can only it's from what I understand, you can only get your instructions to use glue on pizza at Google. You won't be able to get your instructions to use glue on pizza over at Microsoft or other search engines or other generative AI engines, because they can't get to Reddit where it tells you to use glue on your pizza.
Exactly. Except
I got it. I understand.
Published, and they can scrape the search results, and they've done that in the past. So they'll probably get it anyways. They just won't get it directly from Reddit.
Okay. Okay. Here's one that I'm not sure how I feel about. In some ways, I can see this being really, really, really good. In some ways, I can see this being very, very, very dangerous and difficult. But I haven't used it. I haven't touched it. I haven't played with it. So I honestly don't know. I've just read the Roger Monty article. And if Roger's writing about it, I tend to pay attention.
That's true.
Okay. Oh, and also they're a sponsor. Wix AI. Wix has announced a suite of AI tools that will help you create topics, article outlines for blog posts. The idea being that this AI is going to help you maintain authenticity and, basically help you engage and convince potential customers to buy your stuff Interesting point that Wix made. On average, sites with blogs get 86% more organic traffic than sites without blogs.
Which totally makes sense because you have all this informational and general content that your site can be found on.
Yeah, being
So
you're
it totally
updating
makes
content
sense.
frequently and you have action around the website. People go there. Some people will go there as a destination just to read what you wrote. Google sees that
Exactly.
sort of stuff, and it's not a ranking factor exactly, but Google respects it.
So the Wix tool has the following benefits or features. So this is a versatile content creation, from ideation to creating full posts or outlines, extensive customization, selecting the outline tool for a suggestion or structure paired with writing instructions, combining AI assistance with creative control, titles, image, and SEO optimization tools, blog titles, images, existing text, visual content, making the blog content more visually appealing, access to Wix business solutions. It does seem like, though, they do have a focus on preserving authenticity, so you can dial up or down how much the AI is involved.
Yep.
And they can help you with a content plan or a content calendar. So I think I have no issue with anything except the AI writing your stuff
the
for
entire
you because,
post. That's where they got me, where it said the entire post. I'm like, oh man, you had to do that.
Yeah, because we do know that from the groups that you and I are in, that people bragged about, oh, I did 1,000 articles with AI, and look how great I'm doing in traffic, and then boom, 3 months later, traffic's all gone.
Not
And
just
not coming
that.
back.
Not just that. I honest to goodness read certain people because of the way they write.
Of
And I
course, yeah,
want
same here.
and it how to say this? It takes a while to become to learn to do that. If you depend on AI to write your posts for you, you're never going to learn to do that. And you know what? Most people it won't make a difference for because, you know, most people are just middling writers. But some people, if Lisa Barone with in the early days, it was a writer named Lisa Barone. She was probably the most honest writer in search. Like it was just emotion that dripped out of her fingertips. And she worked for Bruce Clay, and Bruce pushed her hard. She had to produce article after article after article after article, several a day. And had she turned to AI, she would never have developed the chops that made her one of the best writers I've ever read in search.
True. Yeah. Well, anybody who writes too, like, you know, I missed when we took comments away. Sometimes I get, you know, just killed in the comments, but it made me a better writer because I knew next time how to write in a way that was more maybe clear, or I made my points better, or I had better research, whatever it happened to be. But I also do, there is a potentially damaging thing for your website. So we also know from a post the other day, unfortunately, I cannot find the reference right now, but was that Google was going to be concentrating more on eliminating AI content. They consider AI content to be low quality content off the bat. So content is just content until Google assesses it. But when they've determined they think it's AI content, they automatically started at low quality, and you have to do a lot to it to make it high quality.
Now that all of that said, there is some really cool things in this tool set.
Yeah,
help you
definitely.
Do you know how hard it is to do a really good content calendar? And I mean a really good one. It's really difficult.
Hard.
It's really hard. And to keep track of that is really difficult. If Wix's tools could help webmasters produce better, I love the image support and the you know, making the post look better, that kind of support. Because most writers have the aesthetic quality of Elmer Fudd.
but
they
be
write
careful,
well.
Google has stated they do not like stock or AI images in your original content.
And that may be true, but you know, when you're just when you're mass producing content, you know, that just happens, right?
Oh, you won't necessarily get dinged for it, but they definitely prefer it to be authentic and real. Yeah.
Sure. I get that. Okay, we are about 25 minutes away from end of show. We've rounded the corner. Where to next?
Ooh, where to next? Well, you know, while we're talking about this content, didn't we have, let's see. Oh, the algorithms, yes. Search algorithms being updated to tackle deepfakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's actually going to be handling deep fakes or just sort of having if you name somebody.
That's both, but it's really hard to do algorithmically.
Yeah, if you, so Google's going to be going after deepfakes. If you look for person X deepfake, that search isn't going to go anywhere. But if you look for celebrity deepfakes and then troll your way through to find person X, Google's probably going to feed content to you that will get you there. So yeah. I mean, like, what do they do here? Well, honestly, they've taken out real name search when in relation to deepfakes. What?
Yeah, and they're trying to determine deepfakes. Remember, we know that some of the people, their tools will put in a file and the video that it is AI generated. Also, if there's mass reporting, so they're not going to downrank the top deepfake porn sites unless you're a victim and it's mass reported. So, which kind of like, what do? Get all your friends to report? I don't know. But remember the DMCA takedown?
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? It does strike me that there's a service. If anybody out there is looking for something good to do in the world, here's a service you can provide. Seriously, you want to help people provide reporting of mass deepfakes being published, especially if they're not wealthy celebrities or have, like, you know, deep pocket lawyers. It's a good deed you can do. There you go. Some Webcology fan is going to go out and change the world.
Now, if your site is using deepfakes, that's not just porn, that's just deepfakes in general. Your site could be seen as being, it could be downranked, meaning you lose your traffic. So it depends on probably how you're using them. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, here's how to do deepfakes in Hollywood. It's probably not going to get downranked, but here's like 100 famous celebrities all deepfaked. Yep, that'll probably get you removed from search. So.
No, but say Jim Boykin does one of his joke album covers where he puts himself in with Kiss or the Beatles. I don't think he's going to get in trouble for that.
No. Definitely not.
If you're making deep fake porn, well, actually, there's a new law that's going through Congress that will, even if you're just creating it without publishing it, this law might cover you. AOC is, I think she has bipartisan sponsorship. I'm not sure who the GOP sponsor is, but it's weaving its way through Congress. It's in the House right now, and it covers even the creation of, regardless of publishing. We'll see where that goes under the First Amendment and the courts, but it sounds like a powerful challenge to deepfakes.
Except if you're a deepfake porn site, that's authentic. Then Google's fine. I don't know how they're going to tell the difference.
But. Okay, so they're just taking this. You just can't name someone deep person X deepfake. That's what the story's about, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Google, you can do better than that.
Speaking of doing better than that. Google's gold medal, Google wins the gold medal for worst Olympic ad was one of the articles this week. Did you see the ad?
I did not. No, no.
I have not seen the whole thing. I just saw clips of it. But basically, a little girl is running and says she loves Team USA, Cindy McLaughlin Levron, I believe is how you say her name. Mm-hmm. And her dad fires up an AI chatbot. And a little tone deaf there, Google. Like, let's not teach our child to like emote like their feelings to their, you know, favorite track star when you want to be a track star. Let's just have the AI bot do it. So they got hit pretty hard for being tone deaf and for putting out a bad ad. Also, because it's encouraging children to use something artificial instead of developing their
actual
own
real relationships and stuff.
Exactly.
I saw an ad for a product called Friend that does the exact same thing. It's your little chatbot buddy that hangs around your neck.
It's bizarre.
It made me so sad to see that.
I don't even understand it. The commercial I saw for it, people haven't seen this, it's a necklace around your neck and it's with you all the time, but it was Enemy. It wasn't called Friend. It was called Enemy.
Oh, I like that one. That's what it so insults you all day long and motivates you by kicking your ass.
It told you to do really bad things, but it's the same company and they got $1.8 million and they've spent $1 million on the domain name.
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh my God.
So yeah, so it's like, I forgot what the situation was, but basically you should burn down his house. Like stuff like that. I thought it was a joke.
That's the one that I want. I don't want the Fred one, which is just meaningless affirmations. You can do it. I honestly, of course I can do it. I'm going to burn down the guy's house. Jeez.
Yeah.
If I'm willing to do can that, what am I, what do you think? What else do you think I might do?
Can you imagine the first time someone who's not mentally capable of discerning reality goes and burns down someone's house at the suggestion of this thing? Like, oh no, it was really bad. If anyone wants to see it, you just have to Google, I think, probably enemy AI or friend AI or something like that. It was really bad. But the Google one, the Google response to the Google ad was, we believe that AI can be a great tool for enhancing human creativity, but can never replace it. Our goal is to create an authentic story celebrating Team USA. So there you go. We're not sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, this is, here's a story that actually I think we should have covered much earlier in the show. But it's just, it's put it down. I put it down a little bit too far on our sheet. JavaScript, the SEO bugaboo of JavaScript. So a big study on how Google search deals with indexing JavaScript has been done. Went and checked over 100,000 Google fetches to test and validate Google's SEO capabilities. Test was performed by Vercel and MERJ. And there's four SEO ideas that the study looks at. Number one, Google can't render client-side JavaScript. Number two, Google treats JavaScript pages differently. Number three, rendering queue and timing significantly impact SEO. And number four, JavaScript-heavy sites have slower page discovery. So as it turns out, these are all myths.
I gotta say one thing there though. When they say Java, you can't read a JavaScript page.
Mm-hmm.
If the JavaScript has to be interacted with to create the page content, then page will not be read.
Something's got to trigger it. You're right. Okay, so Google can't render client-side JavaScript. Google, according to the study by Vercel and MERJ, Google completely renders 100% of HTML pages. Otherwise, they throw an error. Otherwise throws an error. It renders 100% of HTML pages, whether the HTML is contained in JavaScript or in just, you know, straight up code side HTML. Google treats JavaScript pages differently. No, Google successfully renders pages and discovers links. Most pages spend less than 20 seconds in the render queue, so rendering queue and timing does not impact SEO. I'm pretty sure it does. Some pages go longer than 20 seconds. These things actually do make a difference. And Google, if you're talking like hundreds of thousands of pages, Google cares. I'm sure they do. JavaScript-heavy sites have slower page discovery. In reality, sitemaps eliminate difference between discovery across various rendering methods. So this is a really long study. It's definitely worth reading. In my personal experience, you want to help Google read the HTML by providing pre-render HTML.
Yeah, the static HTML will always be faster. Yeah. And also, there are studies by Bartos's group, Wunley, and their partners that show that if you test this differently, some of these things are actually issues. So I would like to see their response to this, which I'm sure they'll put out at some point. And even in the recommendations, there are things that it depends for all the things they listed were not a problem. There's a lot of it depends in there as well.
Now,
point is, if you can do static HTML, do static HTML. If you can server-side render, do client-side as a last resort, because there are issues with JavaScript according to Google themselves. So,
that said, Google is much better at figuring out rendering JavaScript and understanding when there's been changes made to pages. It doesn't have to render all the stuff in your JavaScripts all the time, provided your page hasn't changed that much.
Well, they have a chart on here that tells you like static site generation, mm-hmm. incremental static regeneration, server-side rendering, client-side rendering. Client-side rendering, which is pure JavaScript client-side rendering, always performed on their own chart in their own study, always performed worse than the other ones. So do be aware you can't just do client side rendering and expect to perform as well as like a static site.
Okay, so go check out the study though. Go read the study. You can get links to it from SEO Roundtable or Vercel.com on their blog. From our Never Let Engineers Name Stuff file.
Definitely not. Always a bad idea.
Google has released hidden gem stores as a search feature. You want to go for this? Because I'm just going to start yelling.
I know. It's like, I know you keep the arms of the company separate, but did they not know there's already something called the hidden gems algorithms, which has nothing to do with the hidden gem stores?
Know what? I was having lunch and I heard some guy talking about hidden gems at another table, right? And I thought, that's a really good name. So I took it.
Yeah, it's sort of like the core update in March, April was five different things, but they just kept saying core update because, you know, that's easier, I guess. So.
Okay, but no, but come on, they already have something called hidden gems. So why are they making something else called hidden gems?
I know. It's like testing a new feature named hidden gem stores. Shows you shopping and merchant listings from various stores and brands not related to Google hidden gems. And it's just kind of a list with drop downs of different famous brands. I don't know how helpful that is. I know that I know there are running shoes called New Balance, and I know there's a store called Famous Footwear and Zappos. So, but that's what they surfaced in the one they displayed in the article.
Okay, so again, if you're a marketing manager or even somebody in public relations and an engineer comes up and says, I have a really good name for this, shoot them. No jury of your peers is going to find you guilty. Trust me on this. They know, every jury of your peers knows this. You never let engineers name things, ever.
That's true.
Okay.
I got some fast stories to go through.
Well, I got one more from the Why Are We Talking About This category. Do not make your m.urls the canonicals. Don't make your m.urls canonical because John Mueller says so.
By the way, if you have an m.dot, catch up to 2024. Google told you to get rid of m.dots in 2017, 2018.
Yeah, you didn't get the facts? Jeez. Yeah,
I know if you're a behemoth, it's hard, but get out the m.dot. It has never been a better alternative than a responsive design. And it's just, you just need to do it.
And for God's sake, don't make them canonical.
Yeah, use your real alternate for your M dot. Don't make it your canonical because then Google's all sort of confused and you put it through a terrible loop and it probably won't be able to find the content.
And everybody knows you're using M dots. Okay, yeah. Let's go on.
Okay, so some quick ones. If you have Twitter and you use a Mac device and you use the Twitter app, it's gone away. It's no longer in the store. But the iPad version, which you now have to download, may suspend your account. So be careful before you
download it. Why might that happen?
Because it only works on Macs with the new Apple silicone chips. Like my Mac is right before that. So it would suspend my account on that Mac. So you have to use it via the web browser, which is what I use it anyways. I hate the app, to be honest.
Doing that because nobody had gotten around to changing the old branding. It was still using old Twitter branding.
That's true too. They're using Twitter instead of X, yes. But the main issue is the chip doesn't work with the new app. So it winds up suspending your account. So just do yourself a favor if you're on a Mac, like with me, not on the new M1 chips or the M3 now or something. Just use the browser. Don't use the app. Don't use the iOS app. So, and then let's see, we've got Microsoft is adding generative AI search to Bing like Google has.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that last week, about how they're going to be side by side with that Temblue links and stuff.
Oh yeah, we did. Okay, yeah, it was a story this week too. So
the thing is, they're adding it. It's actually happening. But they were testing the layout last week. They're expanding the test to everybody. So people using Bing, you're going to start seeing this. If you react well to it, this may be your new SERP layout for a while. I hope, I'm honest to goodness, if generative results are going to be part of search and I see use for them in certain cases, I think it's wonderful that there's links, that there's 10 blue links besides so that people have options instead of having to scroll down and look for them.
Yeah, Bing's layout is definitely better for organic sites. So that's a good thing. Yeah. Also, Google Discover has been promoting AI overviews in search. So if you're using Google Discover and you see a little button that says AI overview, those are now being integrated into Google Discover. I can't handle them on a desktop. On a mobile phone, they're so much worse because they're so big. So I just skip past them. I don't open them ever because you can't close them. Once you open them, you can't close them. That would be really helpful.
So well, here's an example of how they're using them. What do you know about fencing? I don't know a lot about fencing, except that you use swords and you stab people. But apparently you don't actually stab people. Fencing isn't nearly as much fun as it looks. AI overview, or if this is a place where AI overviews can actually be really useful. It can tell you everything there is to know about fencing really fast. And you don't got to go looking for that information. Not like you really cared. You're just watching some event you watch once every 4 years. There, I can see that being quite useful.
See, here's my brain though. This is my brain says it is not right all the time. Is the information I'm getting going to be correct? Probably not. So I'm going to go ahead and search for it. So that's what I do. But but if you don't care, if you're not worried about it, yes, that's probably helpful. Okay. So are we moving on? Are we done with that one?
Let's move on.
Okay. Google Maps is getting two helpful new features. So they're going to put a redesign into Google Maps, and then also they're adding two ways. They're going to actually show you like where to enter the parking area to get into an area. That happens a lot here in Vegas. It'll say go into this apartment complex, but there's a gate there that you can't get through. Like it's not a gated community. It literally is a gate. Like firemen can go through it, and that's the only people. So they're going to actually show you where the entrance is, and they're also going to highlight the buildings better, and they're going to show you parking spots. So those are pretty cool. I think those would be helpful.
Yep. At the same time, it's giving drivers more reporting features, allowing people to report incidents, road closures, construction, speed cameras, and police presences with a new user interface.
Yes, it seems like it's going more toward Waze. I do not like Google Maps. I use Waze, and Waze has that. It'll say to you, "There's this car on the side of the road," and you pass it. And it goes, "Is it still there?" And you're supposed to click the button, but you're not supposed to use it while you're driving. So I'm not sure how that works. But anyway, yeah, you're supposed to click the button and say it's still there.
You're supposed to use it while you're driving. You're just, you know, it's like when you go to a bar and they tell you not to drive after drinking while serving you a drink.
Exactly.
It's just like that.
It's the same thing. So those would be good. I think it make Google Maps more like Waze, and Waze is super functional. I love Waze, so I use it all the time. Okay. And then Google is testing Sitelink pill formats on desktop search. So you know those little words we get underneath our search listing, Jim. You know the little tiny.
So
ones.
Instead of like looking like a link, it'll look like a bubble.
Yes, it's a bubble. Bubblicious.
Does that attract more mouse clicks? Is that a better mousetrap?
I don't know. I don't think it probably will, but they're testing it, so we'll see. If it sticks around, I guess it did, and if it doesn't, then it didn't.
I'm of the school of thought that says you need to tell users what to do, and a little blue underline tells them graphically what to do.
Yes, I am very big on that. I mean, you see heat maps of the difference.
Yeah.
The traditional link is actually really powerful and more powerful than most other design options. So... where do you want to go next on here? We got a few more short stories.
I like Google Knowledge Panel testing video from section. I really, really, really like this because, again, this allows you to expand the number of places you can market your business using video, and Google will bring these into, you know, your businesses or your knowledge panel. So places like video from Instagram or TikTok used to be that video that Google was only pulling from YouTube. Now it's going to pull from many more sources. And I think, again, that kind of marketing data freedom is that's going to be really good for certain types of businesses.
Definitely. And then we're going to move into the fact that Google is testing replacing Twitter as the top social media that you see at the top of the page when you like Google a person or a place that someone has an account.
What the hell took them this long?
You know, I personally really hate that, and I really wish you had the option to opt out because I have different facets of my life. And Twitter is a different facet. I don't need broadcasts with my name every time someone looks me up. But they're also going to do Facebook, TikTok, Threads. I don't know. I wouldn't really want any of those showing up. So I really think Google should allow you to opt out of that, but they don't. So keep an eye, especially if you're someone who's public or in business to see what they're pulling up and what they're grabbing from your accounts?
I have a deep problem with white supremacy. I have a just a horror. I can't tell you how angry white supremacy makes me. And so Twitter is a, or I'm sorry, Twixter is a white supremacist platform. I can't believe Google still features content from them. So yeah, that's
it could be why because I'm sure that stuff's getting surfaced. Just the same reason all the advertisers love Twitter is because of that horrible advertising getting placed next to those horrible tweets. Also, something else that Google's going to be doing in search is they're going to allow you to generate a menu for your restaurant. I don't know who else would have a menu, but I guess any product maybe from a photo. So they're going to generate the try to generate it from the photo. I don't know. Okay. Seems so just to type it in. But
that's actually a really cool thing. Think of all the food bloggers, all the quote unquote influencers, my partner Shauna included, who go to a restaurant. When Shauna and I go to a restaurant, she has to have a picture of the food. Shauna's a chef. She's a culinary school and everything.
Oh, that makes sense.
And this is part of her thing. She'll put it up on Instagram and write about her experience.
Sure.
This is amazing for, I mean, it's horrible for persons like me who have to sit there while their partner does this, but this is amazing for restaurants. I mean, you think about all the people who do that, right?
No, but it's converting your photo into a menu.
Yeah.
It includes item names, descriptions, and prices.
Yeah. Isn't that neat? That's really cool.
Oh, you know what I think they're doing? Now I understand what they're doing. I didn't understand at first. Now I understand. A lot of restaurants use like images of their
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Or,
Yeah, okay, that is good. Because a lot of times these images are PDFs and it's horrible and they just don't have a page where their menu items are. So, yeah, that would be good. I agree. That would be good.
So again,
change your mind in an instant.
So again, think of all the influencers, all your customers who come and take photos of your food. Now you've got a way to interact with them. You want that photo.
Yes. And another thing they brought is Google Lens will now is now using circle functionality on desktop. So like if you have a tablet or something or a touch top desktop, you can use it to do that, or you can drag the photo into a location and it will tell you more about it. So that's you can drag the lens icon over part of the web page and it will search it for you. So that could be definitely very helpful, especially if it's like a location you don't recognize, or you know, we have some of those people in our industry who are like, where am I? Guess. Now we can guess pretty accurately. It's put a lens over their photo. and then I think that that's all the stuff in Google search. And then I think we have two more quick stories we should cover, and then we're just a little over time.
I'm trying to find the other stories. What do you got?
Well, one, Google Workspace authentication vulnerability allowed thousands of accounts to be exposed.
Yep.
What happened was they were able to get around the email verification. So that's, I believe, is being fixed as we speak. And it's not widespread, but it's still something you should be aware of.
Now,
it only works on email verified accounts, not the domain verified accounts.
Yeah, so, and as I understand it, people weren't actually able to get into Gmail or anything, but they were able to get into third-party services. Is that correct?
From the article I've read, yes. I haven't read much more on it in depth, though, so it could be right or wrong, but I think you're correct.
Well, none of the fake accounts were used to abuse Google services like Gmail or Docs. They were used to access third-party services through the sign-in with Google feature.
Which can be pretty massive, because how often do you sign in with Google? I sign in with Google quite a bit.
Oh, sure. What? We were talking about AI deepfakes a while ago. Every AI company out there allows you to sign in with your Google profile, because then they get all your juicy Google contact information.
Exactly. and then moving on to, I think, two of the last ones we should probably say something about. They are in the realm of politics, but they are also in our area.
Okay, so in both cases, Google did not discriminate against the RNC.
No, I remember I read an article years ago about how Google did not suppress conservative media or conservative articles. It's kind of the same thing. They made these same claims in 2018, like almost exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
So Google autocomplete was not showing Trump's the shooting. And that's because Google has a national suppressor on things that can be violent events, mass shootings, shooting, you know, attempted assassination, things like that. So they have, they're working on fixing that, or they may have already fixed it. And then the RNC, the Republican National Committee, filed a lawsuit claiming email spam filters in Google were harming their fundraising. Google won that one in actual court, actually threw it out. So there is no basis to the suit, and the RNC was not hurt by Google's spam filters.
Google still has a right to limit the number of emails sent in one blast, because that's what that came down to. That's what they were mad about.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I have a lot of, you know, it's political season in the United States. I have a lot of political emails sitting in the spam filter, so it would have to affect them uniquely. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, everybody else the same. And that's what's happening. It was completely dismissed. There's no basis for the lawsuit.
Yeah. So. Okay. And by the way, you're going to hear a lot of political chicanery. And normally, often we would caution that this happens from both sides, but I'm not so sure that's as wise a caution this time around. But you know what? You're going to hear a lot of political chicanery in the next few months. Web literacy, one of the things that web culture talks about frequently, especially in the emerging age of AI, is media and web literacy. We are the web professionals. Most people listening to the show have been around the web for quite a while. So use your very best skills to discern what is right and what is wrong. And for goodness' sake, do not pass disinformation during this election cycle. Democracy depends on it.
Yeah, and it's not just the U.S. It's around the world. We've covered this before. I don't remember exactly how many countries and how many billion. It's like 3 billion people are voting in this next few months.
Some of them already have. India's already voted. Already have, yeah. But okay. But yeah, 2024 was a big year for elections.
Yeah, so this is in all countries, not just the United States, but definitely be careful. There is going to be a lot of disinformation, especially with the use of AI and AI tools. And you know what I like to do is I know I have media literacy, so I pass on facts and truth to friends via my social media, so they have the actual information. So, like, you know, from like Reuters and AP News and stuff like that. So, but it is very important during this time of year. So, and to end on a positive note, hopefully, I will be attending Black Hat, DEF CON, and B-Sides, which are the three hacking summer camp. It's called Summer Camp, Hacker Summer Camp here. There's going to be a lot of AI stuff that's going to be covered. So hopefully I will be able to come back next week with some good information for you about how to protect yourself and how to identify things like deep fakes. I am going to a session actually on deep fakes and AI and disinformation.
Brilliant. Okay, yeah. On that, we have gone full clock. It's more than an hour past the time. We started recording on the 1st of August, 2024. So, friends, you've been listening to Webcology Recorded Live Podcast on August 1st, 2024. On behalf of Christine Chakashi from Sites Without Walls, it's Jim Edge from Digital Always Media. Be well, rank well, be kind to each other, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.